We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This Sunday episode of Inside Golf Podcast is brought to you by The Rabbit Hole. Bar none, this is the best analytical advantage that you can have in golf betting and DFS. If you don't believe me, and let's just say us over here at Run Pure Sports are in for quite the sweat tomorrow at Riviera using this tool. It's always going to be a good week for me when Xander Cantlay are at the top of the leaderboard, an even better week when Zalatoris is up there too. But using the rabbit hole, the big stand was Jason Day, 1/4 the ownership of Adam Scott in California. What are we doing? So my fate lies completely in the hands of Hideki and Cam Davis. I bet you can imagine how that's going to go. But I feel pretty great about my other big four. If you want to use these tools, if you want to see my model, if you want to look at the stats that actually matter, stats that are not inputted incorrectly in other databases, stats that give you access to missed fairway penalty, different types of courses, including tropical courses, resort courses, coastal courses, driver-heavy courses. Driver-heavy courses in easy scoring conditions where the categories for easy scoring conditions are actually inputted correctly, you can head on over to betspurtsgolf.com. You can sign up today for the cheapest and best golf database and model builder on the internet. So you can get access to that data that I have been using to build models that has given me a career, right? That I've been using over the past 4 years. Only reason I have a career doing this is because of looking at data like this. These types of metrics are now available to everyone, which is why I cannot understate the fact that this is the strongest innovation in golf analytics I've seen in my 4 years doing this. So betspurtsgolf.com, code INSIDEGOLF, okay? That is the code, INSIDEGOLF, the name of this podcast, to get you 25% off. I was not expecting that. That is a big discount on an already incredibly cheap product. Okay, so using the INSIDEGOLF discount, that is the important part, to get 25% off. This tool is $7 a week. And that's not even the best deal. It's $15 a month. I only throw out the weekly option if you want to give it a shot and kind of let us prove it to you. But it's $150 for the entire year, okay? And I think most people listening to this podcast, particularly the Sunday ones, know that I'm very particular about my partnerships, know that I care very much about data, know that I've been doing this for a while now, and I'm only going to tell you and give you the best information out there that I have. And this is something special. This is something I'm really excited to be a part of. And if you don't believe me, give it a shot for a week. It's $7. We've been crushing it so far, and we are going to continue to work our asses off to make this the best golf analytics database on the internet. So betspurtsgolf.com. Code INSIDEGOLF for a whopping 25% off. Do not know how long that is going to last. Maybe not so long if these keep flying off the shelf. So sign up today. Hit me up with any questions about navigating it. unlike other places. We are here to help. We will respond. We welcome feedback. And we will not stop until this has everything that you can possibly want. Okay, Riviera Week. I've had a lot of fun at this golf tournament the past couple of days. It has played out very similar to how I've expected. You know, as I mentioned, anytime Xander Cantlay are at the top of the leaderboard, that is going to be a good week for me and for Rumpier Sports. We talked all week in the Rumpier Sports Discord about how Xander is not hurt. The wrist injury was an excuse to get out of playing Phoenix when he saw the weather. That is the type of proprietary caddy info that you get in the Rumpier Sports Discount. Yes, we are very proud of that and work very hard at acquiring actionable information to you, right? We believe that's something that really sets us apart. But a lot of the things we talked about, you know, just seeing it in person, spoke a lot with people on grounds before the tournament started. We've been having guys on ground on our premium show every week now. It was really confirmed to me seeing a lot of the golf course on Thursday. Just a lot of sneaking suspicions about strategy on certain holes, about players hitting driver more, taking more aggressive lines. And all of those guys, Xander, Cantlay, Zalatoris, Les, even Day, all elite drivers, powerful drivers, great middle iron players. And that is not to say that I did not get stuff wrong this week. I bet Justin Thomas at 22-1. Whoa, that was a mistake. And Matt Fitzpatrick, 40-1. Yikes. Big time yikes. So important to be accountable on everything. Certainly a lot of selective victory lapping in the golf street. So I want to give the full picture always. And JT and Fitz were massive misses for me. Costly misses for me. Now, I still have a massive sweat tomorrow with the Xander Cantlay, Zalatoris, Day, Hideki, Cam Davis lineup, and a couple other good Xander Cantlay, Zal combinations. But I also played 40% Fitz. I also played 55%, 40% Fitz, 55% Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas was in 55% of my lineups. That was horrendous chalk, okay? And I'm generally pretty good at knowing when to avoid that. Boy, did I fall for that this week. Okay, but any combination of Zal, Cantlay, Xander, ideally Xander winning, because I have that outright as well, is going to be hopefully a wonderful Sunday for me at Riviera. Perfect golf course for Xander via what I was seeing on the rabbit hole. Got the confirmation he wasn't hurt. Kind of got squeezed in a lot of contests. I have him at 12 to 14% in some of the ones I'm in. That is a steal. Okay. So it's been a blast. It's been a busy week. Watched a lot of golf, played a lot of golf. And yet still somehow have devoted an embarrassing amount of time to breaking down the Mexico Open. Why, you may ask? Well, because these are the weeks that I do the best. Now it's fortunately been a great start to this year, mainly because I've been working harder than I ever have at this, you know, little chip on my shoulder, kind of trying to prove myself at RPS and give the subscribers the best experience possible. But we haven't even gotten to the shitty field events. These are my bread and butter. This is my biggest edge. This is why the fall swing has always been the most profitable stretch of the golf calendar for me. So I know it's not a great field. Zalatoris, Finau, really the headliners of note before you get into, you know, the Steven Yeagers and Nikolai Højgaards. But if you're willing to do the legwork, I think there's a big edge to be found, particularly on this golf course. So without further ado, let's dive in. Mexico Open, we have been coming here for 2 years now. Okay. It's a new tournament. 2022, John Rahm wins over Tony Finau at 17 under. Rahm was plus 450 that week. 2023, Tony Finau wins over John Rahm, 24 under. Finau was plus 750 that week. This year, no Rahm to worry about, but we are getting Finau. And this golf course is in Vallarta, Mexico. It's called Vidanta Vallarta. It was designed in 2015 by Greg Norman. Par 71, 7,316 yards. Six lakes. Water comes into play on 11 different holes. You know, it's not really an ocean course. The ocean doesn't really come into play on this course, but there's still some inland water hazards. The fairways are past palm, measuring 41 yards wide. Wide fairways here. And what do we know about past palm? It's a stickier and slower grass. You know this if you've ever played golf and, you know, places like Mexico, you're not going to get as much rollout. That's why we'll be looking at things like carry distance and distance to apex on the rabbit hole. Can't find that at other places. That is going to be a lot more important this week than driving distance. Rough is past palm 2 inches. Greens are past palm running 11 to 11.5 on the stint meter. You know, pretty slow greens by tour standards. And it's a bit of a unique golf course, okay? I'll explain why. You don't see too many golf courses on the PGA Tour that have four par fives and three and five par threes. So the four par fives range 548 to 637 yards. The five par threes range 174 to 226. And it has five par fours that are over 450 yards and six par fours that are over 500 yards. So right off the top, this is a pretty long course. Now, especially consider the fact that it measures almost 7,400 yards with five par threes and a drivable par four. This is a much longer golf course than the scorecard suggests. And you're not even getting as much elevation as you would get at other parts in Mexico like Chapultepec. And you're not even going to get a lot of run out on past palm either. So this golf course plays pretty long. Now, this is a very good token example of distance not being a determining factor in being able to really challenge golfers anymore. Okay. Wind is what challenged professional golfers. And maybe we'll get some wind this week, and wind is really the only thing that's going to prevent this tournament from not being won at 20 under plus. Okay. But this is literally the golf course with the longest par fours and par fives on the PGA Tour. And it still played as the 11th easiest golf course on the PGA Tour. The next year it played as the 12th easiest golf course on the PGA Tour. Once a lot of these guys, remember the first year, nobody had ever seen it. Last year, it played even a little bit easier because a lot of the guys that played at year one were coming back from year two. And they had a little experience on this golf course as well. And we can talk about the correlation of course history here. But you get Rahm winning the first year 17 under par by one stroke over Finau, Kitayama, and Brandon Wu. Of the top four finishers, at least three of them, Brandon Wu a little bit more volatile, entered this event as one of the 15 best elite drivers of the ball and long iron players in this field. Now, far too small of a sample size to make serious broad generalizations about a definitive roadmap to success on this golf course, but 2 years in, we're starting to paint a pretty clear picture, I would say, that I feel pretty comfortable with, right? And that is that players who hit the ball a long way and are great mid to long iron players have a sizable advantage. Now, everybody's listening to this podcast. Everybody is going to tell you that same thing, right? So being able to identify the players that hit the ball a long way may not really give you the advantage that we would be hoping for. There's still other advantages to be found, however, that can talk about all week. But the main thing to keep in mind here is That's right. Like on the surface in a vacuum, everything in my data points to the fact that powerful driving off the tee and far more so long iron play, okay? Because even if you do not hit the ball a long way off the tee, you still have guys like Eric Cole and Austin Smotherman who are actually not crazy long drivers of the ball, but are elite long iron players. Every single one of those guys, every single one of the top seven finishers in the field, or every single one of the top seven finishers last year on the leaderboard, every single one of them entering the tournament was a top 20 long iron player in the field, even Smotherman. Okay, the only player, actually six of seven, because the only player who is not a top 20 long iron player in the field was Brandon Wu, who is, you know, Brandon Wu is just the prince of Pospolum, right? So the distance long iron thing, like it's objectively correct. I think the one thing that you just have to keep in mind is, does the pendulum swing too far, right? If you hear every single podcast, every single person just parroting the distance and long iron play, hopefully people weigh distance more so than long iron play, because long iron play is way more important than distance here. But if you hear everybody parroting that same narrative, then a lot of those guys, like, you're just going to get overinflated ownership on guys like Joseph Bramlett and Cameron Champ all week. And you know, then there's probably going to be opportunity on asking yourself the question of whether the narrative has gone too far. But in a vacuum, it's not incorrect, okay? It's very important here. There's no better illustration of Vedanta Vyarta that, like I said, it features the longest set of par fours and par fives on the PGA Tour last year. Almost 40% of all shots are coming with long iron, which happens when you get two to three longer par threes, three to four-ish reachable par fives, and then six par fours where you're going to have it's going to be over 450 yards. So suddenly you add that all together and it's like, wow, it's 11 potentially long iron shots on this golf course. Maybe eight minimum, 8 to 11 long iron shots on this golf course, depending on how you play the par fives. But with all that being considered, you know, the par fours rank 28th out of 45 courses in difficulty, and the par fives rank 30th out of 45 courses in terms of difficulty. So Vedanta Vyarta is just a lot of empty calories. It's an extremely long golf course, but that does not mean it's a hard golf course. The greens are really flat. The green surrounds are fairly benign, so the consequence of misses is not incredibly great. Players are just going to have a long iron in their hands quite often. So it has the longest set of par fours and par fives on the PGA Tour, but they don't even rank top 25 in difficulty. So like I said, it's the kind of the perfect illustration of a golf course that proves that sheer length doesn't make golf hard at the professional level. If you're getting into a debate with somebody about how far the golf ball travels and they tell you, you know, just make golf courses longer, you can point to Vedanta Vyarta being hole by hole like the longest golf course on the PGA Tour and tell them that we tried that and we still got to 25 under. Can't push it back much farther. Okay, driving distance here, about 299.1, 7.7 yards above tour average. Driving accuracy, 63%, 4.3% above tour average. So this is a golf course where you are going to absolutely bomb away off the tee on every hole. The fairways measure a whopping 41.5 yards wide, 7.1 yards above tour average. Last year, Vedanta Vyarta ranked 38th out of 45 courses in strokes gained off the tee difficulty. And each of the last 2 years, it's ranked inside the top 10 in easiest strokes gained off the tee difficulty. It has one of the higher standard deviations of driving distance on the PGA Tour, and it ranked 8th in longest driving distance on tour, featuring the 10th easiest fairways to hit on tour, the 5th widest fairways to hit on tour, 26 out of 45 courses in missed fairway penalty, 34th out of 38 courses in missed fairway penalty the prior year. So Each of the last 2 years, it has ranked inside the top 10 in lowest rough penalty. Yes, the rough is absolutely negligible here. It really sits up on past Pelham. There's some water to this course, but I would not worry much about accuracy here at all. You have to be pretty darn wild to truly find yourself in one of the hazards here. It's not like a golf course like we'll see next week at PGA National, where the water danger at that course is revved up to 1,000. The landing areas are so wide here, and we saw this at El Cardinal, Diamante, the Fall Swing Mexico event, which is a great reference point for this golf course. It truly is. We hit EVR there, and a lot of the reasons that I was on EVR was because of the correlation that I saw with this golf course. So maybe you can back channel that as well. But last year, every single one of the top four gained to the field in driving distance, and 12 of the top 15 gained to driving distance. The prior year, 9 of the top 10 gained to the field in driving distance. And the only player that did not was Tony Finau, who we know is capable of reaching back for a couple extra anytime that he wants it. So one of the things I looked at here using the rabbit hole was carry distance and apex height. Why did I look at that a little bit more than driving distance? Because these fairways are really soft and you're going to be hitting a lot of long irons because this course is really long. So I wanted to see the guys that hit the ball really high off the tee. And there's a lot of correlation there, but like, for example, Cameron Champ ranks 3rd in carry distance and 16th in driving distance, okay? So Cameron Champ hits a really high and long ball. And what do you know? Cameron Champ, who's pretty terrible at golf, has had a tremendous amount of success at this golf course, a 6th and an 8th in 2 appearances. I'll give you another example. Joseph Bramlett, 4th in carry distance, 15th in driving distance. That's one of the bigger deltas. Joseph Bramlett hits a really high ball, doesn't get as much roll, doesn't hit that tumbling ball flight. He finished 10th last year at Vedanta Vallarta. Another big delta here. Will Gordon, 6th in carry distance, 56th in driving distance. Okay, so Will Gordon hits an incredibly high ball, doesn't get as much rollout on his drives, but hits it incredibly high. Will Gordon hits like these balloons. And what do you know? Will Gordon top 25 last year. So there are a ton of examples of these guys where Stefan Jaeger's another example of a much higher carry distance to the driving distance. You actually want to find these guys that hit the ball high on past Pelham. Taylor Pendrith's another example. We love Taylor Pendrith this week. Thomas Dietrich is another example. I like him a lot this week. Top 5 in carry distance, only 37th in driving distance. And then who are the guys that gain the most strokes off the tee on these driver-heavy golf courses with a low missed fairway penalty? Okay, this is something you can only do with the rabbit hole, and I find it incredibly valuable. Who are the types of guys that when you put them on golf courses where they don't really have to worry about much, they can kind of just swing away off the tee? Who are the guys and golf courses that encourage you to hit driver? Who are the guys that gain the most strokes? Keith Mitchell, Jonathan Vegas, Davis Thompson, who I think is going to win this week. Garrick Higo, Will Zalatoris, Cameron Champ, Stefan Jaeger. Interesting. A lot of guys I like in there. A lot of guys that have been good at this golf course before. It's almost like some of the data points that you can find in the rabbit hole with these obscure statistics are going to help lead you to players that have actually been good at this golf course if you're kind of looking at the data that I'm laying out here. So not a surprise to see like somebody like Cameron Champ, who I have been saying for a really long time is not good at golf outside of one specific skill that he has, but he has this one skill that is better served for this golf course than any other golf course on the PGA Tour. So he's actually live this week, in my opinion. He just has not made a cut this year, which kind of dovetails the him not being very good at golf, but he also wins. So I actually don't think that's a bad bet. On approach, 29th out of 45 courses in approach difficulty. Each of the last 2 years, it's ranked inside the top 15 in easiest approach difficulty. And you have this whopping almost 65% of golf shots coming from over 175 yards. Like literally barely any shots from 125 to 175. You can't call this golf course a wedge fest. It is certainly not a wedge fest. Now, with that being said, like the degree of difficulty on these approach shots are very easy. Okay. So just based on sheer volume, long iron play is going to be super, super important just because you're going to have so many of them. And you're going to be able to generate a massive advantage on the field if you're really good at that skill. Which is why you've actually seen Tony Finau and Jon Rahm waltz to the top of the leaderboard, not just because they're the best players in this field, but this is at a course that actually accentuates what they do best. So their advantage grows even further on this golf course. And you see somebody like Eric Cole last year, who isn't a long driver of the ball, but is an elite long iron player, finish top five still. So I can't emphasize enough the importance of this skill any further, long iron play. I think if you're just like dumbing it down and caring about one specific thing, I would say you can build some long iron centric lineups. I'm not really a skill stacker in that sense, but I think there's certainly some value in just identifying the players that happen to be elite at that particular skill. Let's see if any sneaky guys pop out at that may be lower priced. Bobby McIntyre, great long iron player. Chuck Hoffman, great long iron player. Ryo Hisatsune, great long iron player. Alejandro Tosti, who finished 10th here last year. I love a little Tosti this week. Parker Coody, Ben Silverman, Harrison Endicott. I'm just giving you the sleepers with this. Ches Reavy, Michael Kim, my guy Davis Thompson's good at this. There's Cameron Champ again. Jake Knapp, I can certainly tell you, passes the eye test as well from what I saw at Torrey. He's a great long iron player under a limited sample size. But yeah, long iron play is incredibly crucial at this golf course. Around the green, on the other hand, I wouldn't value around the green here at all. Paspalum is an incredibly easy surface to chip on because the ball sits up. Okay, so these greens are pretty large. I would expect players not to have to rely on their short game a lot here. You've got a higher greens and regulation percentage. If they're having to rely on their short game a lot, they probably aren't playing very well. And you know, guess what? When you have slow greens, that actually makes chipping almost easier than putting. Just ask Victor Hovland, the Prince of Paspalum, how easy it is to chip when you don't have to worry about undulation and speed. Slow greens are going to remove an element of touch from the equation, so I would not recommend valuing short game this week at all outside of bunker play because, you know, you can look at this golf course has like a ton of bunkers. Okay, I have to pull up the course sheet to see how many, but I just know from my experience on Greg Norman courses, he tends to over bunker his course, and this course is no different. So if you want to maybe look at a little bit of bunker play as an ancillary stat, you can do that, but I would not recommend looking at short game too much here at all. Putting, very easy putting golf course, 37th out of 45 in putting difficulty, 30th out of 45 in putting difficulty inside 5 feet, 27th out of 45 in putting 5 to 15 feet, 38th in putting difficulty greater than 15 feet. So this is a big inverse from Riviera, one of the toughest putting courses on tour. You're going to get a really soft landing here. And here's what I will say about Paspalum. I went to Mexico last year over Christmas, I played golf every day on slow past Pelham, and I hated it because the course that I play 90% of my rounds at, my course in California, those are rock hard, super fast bent grass greens, and I absolutely love those, and I'm used to those. So when you get on these slow, sticky past Pelham greens, it's really different. You almost have to like change your putting stroke a little bit to adapt. I felt like I had to hit everything so hard. I felt like I was not overreading the putts because I'm kind of a die putter. When I'm used to putting on faster greens, it always just feels like you have to ram it in if you putt the way I do. I don't like it. I'm sure some people do. And I've heard some people say it's easier to putt on past Pelham greens. You know, I think it's a lot more of a personal preference thing, okay? Because I'm sure there are definitely players that aren't very good putters on fast greens that are just more comfortable and love slow greens, right? And that's where the preference aspect of this comes in. I think the reason why you maybe see more bad putters play well on past Pelham is less about the speed and probably more about the fact that the past Pelham greens are pretty flat, right? Like you go to Augusta, for example, Augusta has the most undulating greens on the PGA Tour. And we see bad putters do well there all the time, right? Sergio, Hideki, Adam Scott. There's tons and tons of examples of bad putters putting well on the most difficult greens on tour. Because you can make the argument that when greens are so difficult, some of the elite putters lose a little bit of their advantage. You can also conversely argue that it's, you know, bad putters are going to lose their way so much easier on tougher greens, and good putters are going to be able to take advantage of the tougher greens and rise to the occasion easier, kind of like the thing with good ball strikers on ball striking courses. You can apply some of that to the greens as well. And then you've got a million examples of guys who are bad putters putt well on the easiest greens on tour, like this, because they don't have to focus on reading the greens as much. They're slower. There's less undulation. And then you also see some of the best putters in the world raise their baseline and have a tremendous amount of success on past Pelham, right? Guys like Justin Lauer, Brendan Todd, you know, the list goes on. I can run you through all the slow green putters. Like, these guys are good putters on every surface, and you put them on an easy surface and they're just going to hold more putts. The point I'm trying to make is you can argue this until you're blue in the face, right? There's so much data on both sides of that argument. Okay. And to me, this is just a personal preference thing. So how can we identify the players that seem to like slow greens more, that seem to raise their baseline on slow greens more? And I was looking at that, and this is a database that actually has the slower greens inputted correctly here. So I was very careful looking at the courses that I wanted to qualify for slower greens. But some of these slower green guys that raise their baseline: Peter Malnati, Justin Lauer, Brandon Wu, the Prince of Past Pelham, Harrison Endicott, popping up again, my guy Mark Hubbard, CT Pan, Ben Taylor, who's been really good at this golf course, Taylor Pendrith as well, another Taylor Pendrith sighting. So you really want to look at, you're not going to get a lot of data on past Pelham because a lot of these courses don't have shot length outside of this one, but like Corrales, Puerto Rico Open, all those courses don't have shot length. But just looking at like the best players on past Pelham, you'll still be able to get a pretty good sense of if they're comfortable on these greens, even by looking at strokes gained total, because you're going to have to, putting's going to have to be part of the equation, and they're tee to green past Pelham as well. So it should give you a pretty good sense of who's comfortable on past Pelham in general, and then slower green putters. And then in terms of scoring stats, a ton of stuff I looked at on the rabbit hole. This is such a good rabbit hole week in terms of like nerding out. Like, I was looking at birdie or better percentage from the fairway, because This is a golf course with a very high driving accuracy percentage. I was looking at golf courses that are really easy, but also long, right? I was looking at golf courses that are really easy, but also driver heavy. I was looking at resort courses. I was looking at tropical courses. I was looking at long past palm courses. I was looking at aggressiveness. I was looking, I mean, it's just, it's my playground. It's a really wonderful tool. Like, this is stuff that I did by hand. Like, these are the types of stuff I did. I talked about on my podcast, filtering out different course types. This has been my biggest edge my entire career. Hand building, filtering out these different course types, because I've long maintained that, you know, I've built my career on the fact that conditions matter, weather matters, grass matters, strategy on holes matter, architecture matters, agronomy matters, all of these things matter. And then Ron built a site that saves me hours, literally, like, sleepless long nights. I used to have to stay up so late on like Fridays and Saturday nights building this by hand. Rabbit Hole does that for you in a matter of seconds. So I can talk about my model in a second. The other thing I want to mention real quickly in terms of course history, you know, we really only have a 2-year sample size, but we've had the same players finish first and second each of the last 2 years, obviously Finau and Rahm, and third, really, with Brandon Wu, I think, finished third and fourth. Now, how much can we really glean from that when they were the best two players in the field? I think Brandon Wu is a more actionable data point. Like, why is Brandon Wu second and third here each of the last 2 years? Cameron Champ makes sense of why he has finished top eight each of the last 2 years. Same with Patrick Rogers, finished 10th the last 2 years. Like, that's a skill set that very, very clearly works at Vedanta Vallarta. But if you look at last year's top 14, six of them, almost half, did not play the prior year. So, you know, half the guys in the top 15 of the leaderboard did not play the first year. So, you know, this is about as straightforward and, you know, minimally strategically stimulating as it gets. Akshay, Bhatia, Eric Cole both finished top five without playing here in 2022. There are, of course, some players, Tony Finau, Emiliano Grillo, Brandon Wu, Cameron Champ, Patrick Rogers, that appear to have developed a strong comfortability here. But I would not knock a player too much. I'm certainly betting some guys that have not played here before, particularly if they've played well in other longer past palm courses, because this golf course, there's no strategy to this golf course. Like, there's not a tee shot on this golf course where I think a player really has to be super deep in thought about a decision. And even if they do, a lot of the guys in this field aren't playing Riviera. So they'll be able to get down here, play a practice round, see the golf course. But yeah, the other ones you want to look at, Cocoa Beach, Puerto Rico Open, Corrales, El Cardinal at Diamante. Those are all like 7,400 plus, wide open off the tee, very visually similar. A lot of bunkers, past Palom. Resort courses, right? These are golf courses that are not designed for PGA Tour golf. They're designed for resort play. And then the PGA Tour comes in and says, let's host an event here. And, you know, all they can really do to challenge the pros is make it as long as possible and hope for some wind. And we've gotten a little bit of wind the past couple of years. It's a week to monitor the weather for sure. There have been different variations. If you look at round by round, there's been some rounds that have been windier than others. And this course can play hard if you get wind. It's certainly long enough, and wind just in general makes a golf course play longer, and this is already long. So be sure to monitor the weather throughout the week as well. We'll be talking a lot about that in the Discord too, but let us dive into the model, because this is a banger. Feel really good about this model. Actually, before we dive in, let us take a very quick break, and then we will go through my top 20 and some early leans.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, top 20 in the model. You can see the whole model at betsbertsgolf.com. Promo code INSIDEGOLF for 25% off. Tony Finau, number one. Very interesting Finau decision. Tony Finau is not the player that John Rahm is. Not even close, in my opinion. Okay? And I think the delta between Finau and the rest of the field, I even think the delta between Rahm and Finau was greater than the delta between Finau and the second best guy in the field, who's Zalatoris right now. Jaeger, Højgaard, right? My model says Jaeger. But Zalatoris is on the up and up, and clearly, you know, I'd say peak Zalatoris is probably better than Finau too, in my opinion as well. He certainly plays better on the biggest stages and on at major championships. I do think I'm taking Zalatoris over Finau any day of the week in terms of just eye test who's better at golf. Now, this golf course, however, Finau knows this golf course really well. Okay, I specifically remember each of the last 2 years, I played Finau over Rahm, and did well these weeks, even somehow managing to fade Rahm, who finished first and second. Well, it helped that Finau finished first and second, and as well, Finau was just at a cheaper price and lower ownership than Rahm. And I think it'll be an interesting decision this week on Finau because he's not playing that great. He's putting terribly, although now you get him on really easy greens. Okay, so if there's like a get right spot for Finau's putting, it's here. Just like we saw Scheffler's best putting performance at the season be at Phoenix. Like, this is Finau's Phoenix in terms of putting. He puts a lot better here. But I'm very curious to see where Finau comes in, especially if Zalatoris wins tomorrow. Okay. I'm recording this on Saturday evening. Zalatoris has a pretty decent chance to win at Riviera. Do they price Zalatoris ahead of Finau? If I know it's only his fourth start back, but coming back from a major surgery, but Zalatoris wins Riviera, Finau, the defending champion, it's tough. It's going to be tough. But Finau 1, Jaeger 2. Jaeger is great on these golf courses. Like, I remember betting Jaeger in the fall in Mexico, too. Jaeger's great on resort courses. He's great on, he's sneaky, super long off the tee. Plays great in these easy scoring conditions. Brandon Wu, number 3, the Prince of Pospolum. He's finished second and third here the last 2 years. Taylor Pendrith, number 4. I think that's your winner this week, Taylor Pendrith. EVR, number 5, for a lot of the same reasons that we loved Erik van Rooyen in Mexico in the fall. We love Erik van Rooyen this week as well. It's a great golf course for Erik van Rooyen. Number 6, Alex Smalley. Alex Smalley has played well here. Great golf course for Alex Smalley. 7, Mark Hubbard. Kind of the example of like the Eric Cole from last year, where he's not a long driver of the ball, but he remains such an elite long iron player that this golf course still actually is advantageous to Mark Hubbard, despite the driver, because of all the long irons he's going to get. Hoskard, number 8. I think that'll be a popular selection. Nate Lashley, 9. I always love Nate Lashley. He always rates out well for me. Doug Gim, number 10. Doug Gim's playing some great golf. He helped me out a lot at Phoenix. 11, Carson Young. 12, Justin Lauer. Those are two really good sleepers. I will be betting Carson Young. 13, Johnny Vegas. I think Johnny Vegas is starting to make a little bit of a comeback. Showed some signs of life at Phoenix. I think we'll be back on Vegas as well. Zalatoris, 14. My guy Grayson Sigg, 15. I love Grayson Sigg this week as well. He's great on these types of golf courses. Cameron Champ, 16. I think if you're ever going to bet Cameron Champ, if you're a Cameron Champ guy, this is the week to do it. But can you stomach 4 missed cuts to start the season? Just hemorrhaging strokes on approach. Still a great long-term long iron player, though. You want to play Cameron Champ on long iron courses. It's like hilarious how terrible that guy is with a wedge. And such a powerful driver of the ball as well. Andrew Novak, 17, great iron player for this field. 18, Patrick Rogers. Patrick Rogers got to love the course history with Patrick Rogers. He always seems to show up here. 19, Austin Eckroat, who can definitely win this event. He's played well at Paspalum in the past. Corrales, number 20, Davis Thompson, who I absolutely love this week. There are a couple guys that I'm going to be absolutely in on when odds drop on Monday morning. Taylor Pendrith and Davis Thompson are my first two bets. I don't have a good read on what their numbers will be, to be honest with you. I cannot see a scenario where I'm priced out of betting Taylor Pendrith and Davis Thompson when I look at those odds and see that those guys are way lower than what I would make them. But Pendrith, 8th in this field in carry distance, 10th off the tee on driver-heavy courses with a low miss fairway penalty. So Pendrith's driver will be an absolute weapon here. Great overall iron player. 12th in overall approach play. 3rd in proximity, 175 to 200. 24th in proximity, 200 yards plus. 8th on slow greens. So this guy is checking all of the boxes, okay? Power off the tee. Great on wide open driver heavy courses with a low miss fairway penalty. Great overall approach player. Great long iron player. Does his best work on slower greens, okay? 15th on resort courses. Plays aggressively, okay? Great going for the green hit percentage. 5th on easy driver heavy long golf courses. So Pendrith thrives on these types of wide open driver heavy easy golf courses. He's got a 30th here in his only appearance, where he gained 4.3 on approach and 1.8 putting. He also finished 15th this year in Mexico, and he's coming off a 9th at Torrey Pines. That's another long driver heavy golf course with a low missed fairway penalty, where he gained strokes in all 4 major categories. Okay. So 9th at Torrey Pines. He also has a 10th at the Sony Open. So he's playing great. He's playing great right now, particularly for this field. And it's just an incredible course fit. He has the power off the tee to annihilate this course. He's an elite middle to long iron player. One of the best slow green putters in this field. Great on easy resort courses. Great on easy, wide open, driver heavy courses. Has a 30th here already, where he gained over 4 strokes on approach. 15th in Mexico this fall. That's your winner, Taylor Pendrith. The other guy I want to highlight, there are a lot of good options this week. Like I do like Jaeger. I do like Dietrich a lot. I do like Doug Gim a lot. Alex Smalley, Brandon Wu, obviously, Patrick Rogers, Carson Young, Johnny Vegas, Grayson Sigg. Like, I love all these guys. But Davis Thompson. Okay, and now Davis Thompson hasn't played here before, but he's a great driver of the ball. He hits the ball high. He hits the ball long. He's third off the tee on wide open driver heavy courses. So you want to play Davis Thompson on these types of wide open, low missed fairway courses. He gains off the tee like pretty much no other player in this field. Okay, he just loves these types of golf courses. He's a great overall iron player as well. He's 11th in overall approach play, 12th in proximity, 200 yards plus. So he's checking those boxes. He's got the power off the tee. He's got the great long iron play. He's actually had some solid success on slower greens and on pass palm. He makes a ton of birdies, right? You put Davis Thompson in the fairway, which he's going to be in the fairway on this golf course because of this driver. Third in this field in fairway birdie or better percentage. Eighth on driver-heavy, easy golf courses. So he scores. He makes a ton of birdies. He's been tremendous on these driver-heavy birdie fests. He's coming off a 15th at the Phoenix Open where he gained 4.2 on approach, 2.1 putting. He caught the wrong side of the wave, too, in Phoenix, right? So he got a three-stroke disadvantage in Phoenix, still finished top 15. So he's a great long iron player, a powerful driver who makes a ton of birdies. I think it's a slam dunk this week with Davis Thompson. I really do. Oh, by the way, also 15th at El Cardinal this fall in the fall swing. The most highly correlated course, in my opinion, that and Corrales. So Davis Thompson, Taylor Pendrith, and then I'll give you one more sleeper. Carson Young. I think this is a great, great golf course for Carson Young. Now, he does not have the power off the tee that those other guys do, but he makes up for it by being a top 25 long iron player in this field. Great on slow greens, great on pass palm. He played here last year, finished 15th, gaining over 7 strokes ball striking and 1.8 putting. So despite not having this elite power off the tee, he still gained over 7 strokes ball striking because he's a good driver of the ball, a great long iron player, a great putter on slow greens, great on pass palm, makes a ton of birdies. Also finished, there's that Mexico connection for us as well in the fall swing, 9th at El Cardinal. He's also got a 38th at Corrales Punta Cana as well. Carson Young is coming off a 41st in Phoenix, where he gained 3.7 on approach. And he has now gained over 3 strokes on approach in back-to-back starts. So Carson Young's, the irons are there. The past palm form is there. The form on this golf course is there. The form in Mexico is there. I doubt he, you know, probably low sevens, maybe high sixes for Carson Young. That's a steal. I'm going to be betting him as well. So that will do it for me. That's all I got today with those three guys are big ones. There are a lot more guys that I like, but you know, I'm going to have to narrow it down based on what the odds are saying, the three main guys I'm betting probably at no matter what I mentioned in Pendrith, Davis Thompson, and Carson Young. I think it's hopefully going to be a fantastic Sunday for me at Riviera. And if it's not, that's okay too. I still had a wonderful time this week. I love Riviera. I look forward to this event every year. It was a lot of fun to, you know, meet some new people and see how much the podcast has helped a lot of people this year. I continue to be incredibly humbled by the fact that the podcast is doing the best it's ever can't speak at the end of this podcast. Podcast is doing the best it ever has in a really fractured golf world where I totally understand if people are burnt out on pro golf right now and the PGA Tour's lost a lot of talent. And, you know, I get it. And so I'm so humbled by the Betspurt stuff in week one and the Rumpier Sports stuff in week one and this podcast. And it's been a great little run we're on. And let's keep it going this week in Mexico. So best of luck with your bets this week in Riviera on Sunday. Hopefully we get some formulation of Xander, Cantlay, and Zal and Jason Day sticking around the top. Xander winning's the most profitable for me, but I'd still take a Cantlay or Zalatoris win. And enjoy the golf this weekend on Sunday, and we will back on this podcast feed back on Tuesday morning. Cheers.